have questions just in case. Okay, so like I used to do these all the time. Like when I first started, I like over prepared and I did so many, I wrote out so many questions, but like the past few months I've just kind of been winging it. But when I was looking at your work, I wanted to take note of all of the stuff that I was thinking about.
Yeah.
But thank you for joining me. Thank you for coming all the way out.
Of course.
From Bay Ridge.
I love a track. I love a contemplative train moment.
Do you do headphones or a book or?
I do both depending on my mood. So I always have a book option. And then if I don't feel like doing that, it's headphones. It's music or podcast.
Just raw.
I do raw. Yeah, I do raw sometimes.
I like to do that sometimes. It's bad when you don't have the choice, like when your headphones die. But sometimes when you just like, you're like, maybe I'll just think today.
I know. It's like, maybe I'll just really exist in the world. Yeah. Like you really feel like you're living in the universe or something.
I went for a really long walk the other day. I walked to Clinton Hill.
From here?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was Sunday, like the gorgeous
day. That's so nice.
So nice outside. And I just like, I put on my jacket and my shoes and Ruby was like, where are you going? I was like, I don't know, but I just need to set forth. Mm-hmm. Like I need to go think some thoughts. I have some thoughts that I have to get through.
Was it a headphoneless walk or?
I did have my headphones. I feel like a good portion of it, but at some point I did take them out.
Yeah. I think I also just get tired of it or sometimes I really want to be in my cocoon. On the train or in public, I want to like go inward. And then sometimes I want to be like sort of experiencing like the ambient nature of
the travel. Noise.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's unsafe to wear headphones everywhere you go? Because I don't feel unsafe, but some people say
that. Not unless you're driving or riding a bike or something. But I think otherwise it's fine. I don't know.
Because I feel like, I don't know, if something's happening, you like won't hear it coming. Someone's like approaching you, but.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe there are instances where it could be, but I think 9 times out of 10, it's fine.
Have you had any scary experiences on the train? How long have you been in New York?
So I've been in New York on and off for like 11 years now.
Okay.
I was here for undergrad from 2007 to 2011, and then I moved back here at the end of 2016, and I've been here since then.
Okay, cool. And where are you from?
So my family's from Puerto Rico, so I was born there, but my parents are college professors, mm-hmm. and so we ended up in Indiana.
Okay.
So I grew up in
the best place to be.
It's kind of random. So I grew up in Bloomington, Indiana, or that's where I spent the majority of my childhood. And my parents still live there and my sister lives there as well. So I still have like a connection to the place, but I moved right when I turned 18, pretty much like right when I graduated high school, I moved to New York.
To go to
I went where? To NYU.
Okay, nice.
Yeah. Is that nice?
I don't know.
I feel like all colleges are embarrassing, so it doesn't really matter.
I'm not American, so I don't really have like a good, I don't know. I don't have like a good vibe check of all the different colleges. And I'm also an idiot. And sometimes I'm talking to someone and I ask where they went to school and they're like, oh, in the like Boston area. I'm like, what's there?
Like every school.
They're like Harvard. I'm like, just say that. Cause I don't know.
It's only, is it a roundabout way of them saying Harvard?
Yeah. Or Yale.
Oh, that's so yucky to me. That's so weird.
I know. Like a lot of people do it. I think it's kind of a
thing. If I went to Harvard, I would be like, I went to Harvard.
Yeah.
I feel like with NYU, I'm like, oh, well, everyone thinks NYU students are annoying. So like.
That is true.
Yeah.
I see that a lot on TikTok.
Yeah. There's sort of like a stereotype. I think it's just a New York thing too. It's like, we're going to be harder on like 18-year-old transplants who are like being annoying in New York versus if it were like, I don't know, Ohio or something.
That's true. But when you moved back, was it just for like the city or was it for work? Is it easier to do your work out of New York?
I think it was for a number of reasons. So I'd been living in Detroit for 3.5 years and I really liked it there. And I think my reasoning to move back was mostly that I was traveling a lot for work related purposes. Like, none of the work was happening in Detroit. It was just a place that I felt I had, like, a good home base, and I had a lot of close friendships there, and it was cheaper to live there. So I felt, it felt like a nice place to be. But then I sort of wondered what it would be like if I actually came to New York and tried to be, like, physically present, because I think for a long time I was like, well, I'm making work online, and, like, I have all these, this ability to connect to people, and I've gotten, like, way further in life just by, like, you know, starting a Tumblr when I was 19 than I did doing sort of traditional things. And then I sort of realized that actually it does make a really big difference to be physically sort of present, which is annoying.
I know.
but it's something that I'm sort of, I've warmed up to over the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's funny because you can, all of your stuff can be online, but still at the end of the day, convening in spaces.
People have to sort of, I think that we all think that everyone is thinking about us all of the time or like, and people have to kind of like remember you, and it's not, and posting might help with that, but it's not really, I think just there's more ability for weird sort of serendipitous things to happen when you're in space.
Yeah.
For better or for worse.
Even like, I mean, I feel like you're really good at putting yourself out there online, which is probably why you've had success as a virtual or digital artist or whatever you want to call it. I am not. And I definitely have to be like thrust into places with people in order to make connections. Yeah. And like, I'm not really going out of my way to schmooze or to meet people.
You're not going out of your way to schmooze.
No, I have to like,
you have to just be there.
Yes.
Yeah. So you don't, you're not, would you say that you're not strategic?
No, I'm not. I'm kind of based on vibes alone.
Yeah. I love that.
I like it too, but definitely doesn't make me as productive as I could be.
I think that the bitter sort of truth about a lot of, and I want to say this is about art, making art or being an artist, but I think it's about a lot of people's careers. Like if I were, you know, an entomologist or something, I would probably have weird networking responsibilities as well. But I think there's sort of a showbiz aspect to being an artist or being really anyone in a creative industry that you're not, you don't realize is there maybe starting out, if you're, especially if you're not good at it.
That's true.
Or if it doesn't come naturally to you.
And I mean, that's probably the difference between art world people, quote unquote, especially when you get into like the galleries and the painters and like this whole charade. Is that what it's called? Charade? Charade?
I think you could say it either way.
Okay. This thing that's been going on forever, and then the new net artists or like digital artists who are a lot more welcoming.
I think so. I think they are more welcoming. Mm-hmm. But you see the people that, I feel like we just went straight into it and now we're talking like weird strategy, but, and I want to get out of that conversation. But you see the people that sort of break out of that niche are people that are good at the showbiz aspect.
I mean, that totally makes sense. Do you still find that you have to be good at it even in the spaces that you are in like the digital art spaces?
I think yes and no. I think that you have to just continue to sort of follow up and to show up to things. I think that I've had a really not, I don't, I've had a charmed career in some ways where I think at a young age, a lot of things, a lot of opportunities presented themselves to me. And I think as I've gotten older, I've realized that a lot of that I was relying on that for a long time. And I still sort of do in some ways, but that you have a lot more control over these things and that it's, you're, if you just kind of like ask for things or show up or just like are present and engaged, things sort of like work themselves out.
That is true.
And I think a lot of people are afraid of like asking for things.
So true.
And I have a lot of respect for people that ask things of me. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'm annoyed with them because I don't want to do it. But often when I see someone, especially someone that's young, being sort of like, oh, I am going to take you up on that offer to like get coffee or whatever. I'm like, oh, I wish I did that when I was 22.
Yeah. A friend of mine tweeted recently that like most of success is just following up shamelessly.
Yep.
And I agree so hard, but that sucks because I hate following up.
Yeah, I know. And it's afraid. It's also just like letting go of some of that ego and not being afraid of people saying no or looking stupid.
Yeah.
Or not being cool. Mm-hmm.
Still a very big thing that I have yet to get over. I don't know why I'm so afraid to look stupid or for someone to say no.
Yeah.
Don't
well
know
because
why.
It's painful.
Yeah.
I like it is painful. Like I think rejection is painful. For me, what's more painful is sort of an like an apathetic response versus a straight up no. I think it's more like when someone's like, oh, I know who you are, I'm just like not interested. and they're not saying that, you just can feel it.
Right. Yeah. No, it's rough. I guess it's kind of rough either way. But in terms of what you were saying of like the opportunities that you started getting when you were young, well, I guess, okay, how long have you been on Tumblr? When did you start?
2009. Yeah, okay. January of 2009. So right at the beginning of the year.
And then at what point did it kind of start to turn into something more of a career?
I think it's never really been a career, to be honest. I've never like really made like money.
Opportunities.
I think it shaped my trajectory in a lot of ways. But I was already, you know, I started a Tumblr account. I was 19, probably about to turn 20, I guess. And I was already like in school for art. So I already kind of had these ideas about wanting to make art or wanting to be an artist and what I didn't know what shape that would take. And I think the Tumblr kind of the attention that I got on Tumblr helped kind of shape some of those ideas, mm-hmm. Or some of that trajectory anyway. But I would say maybe like a year or two into it. I mean, 2011 was when I really felt that people were starting to know who I was from this platform, or where there was sort of a spike in engagement, I guess, if you will. Or when it was, I mean, it was before starting a Tumblr, and even when I did start my Tumblr, like in my real life, my name is Amalia, so I was still going by Amalia, and it wasn't until maybe 2011 when I graduated from college I started introducing myself as Molly because people knew me from the internet.
Right.
And so it was just easier to do that, and now everyone just calls me Molly. But that was like never a childhood nickname. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents don't recognize that name. It's not it wasn't intentional. It just like started to bleed into all of these other facets of my life.
Right. It reminds me of like Charlie XCX, which is like a screen name.
Totally. Yeah. And I think that was the impetus with starting Molly Soda or using the name Molly Soda was I was interested in, you know, like MySpace names or like Scene Queens, or like I was really into Lydia Lunch at the time. So I kind of liked like that sort of this playfulness with a stage name. And then it just like these things take on a life of their own.
Yeah, totally. 2011. Wait, when did Tumblr like hit a peak?
Well, I think a lot of people really want to say that 2014 Tumblr is a thing that they're like nostalgic for.
Yeah.
For me, it peaked before that.
Okay.
And I also have to remember, like, I was in college on Tumblr, and a lot of people had really formative sort of like
high school,
teenage experiences on Tumblr. So I was sort of a little bit past that. Although I'm sure a lot of people maybe wouldn't have known that.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I would say that it sort of peaked around 2012, 2013. And then for me, it petered off quite a bit by like 2016. I really wasn't using the platform anymore. I'm back on it now, but it's a fully different experience.
It's a very different space. Yeah. So when you first started it, was it an opportunity for you to show your art or like create something, or were you initially using it as like what it was intended for?
Well, I grew up being very online as a teenager, and I already had a very robust practice of blogging and being present and documenting my life. So I was on Zanga, I was on LiveJournal, I was on MySpace. I had a brief stint on Blogspot. Like I was already doing this for a long time, or at least for 5 years. By the time that Tumblr came around, I was excited by the platform because I was sort of not interested in giving like really detailed accounts of my week and like just uploading photos of my friends and that sort of thing. I wanted to take a step back. And so for me, Tumblr was, it felt exciting because it just functioned quite differently, where you could kind of say as little or as much as you wanted. It could be like a full text blog, but it was really like, I was like, oh, all these like weird photos I have saved to my desktop, I can just like upload to this website. Like, this is so exciting. So that was what was fun about it and thrilling about it. And at the same time, I was in school for art, and I had never really thought to combine sort of my practice of blogging and being a very online person and documenting my life with my art practice, I guess. I mean, you don't really have a robust art practice when you're in a sophomore in college. True, so yeah. Like, you don't really know what you're doing. So it was really just a place where I was experimenting, and I would upload. I was doing this thing in college after a while. I went to school for photography. And so when I started in college, it was really into like black and white self-portraiture film photography. I'd never used Photoshop. I was like really influenced by Francesca Woodman and Cindy Sherman and, you know, the sort of these classic women photographers. And I also grew up in Indiana. So it's like going to be a little bit different than if I grew up in New York with like artist parents.
Yeah,
totally. Like my influencers are going to be different, or my way of getting there. And so when I was in college, I took a web design class in the photo department, and they taught us like a little bit about net art, but really the class was for people to make like portfolio websites. And I just didn't make one. I was just like making weird websites. And so all of this stuff was coalescing at the same time. So I was just trying to have fun on the internet, or like change my approach.
Right. I don't know. I wonder if it was the natural progression. I feel like what I see in a lot of your work is like girl in bedroom.
Yeah.
And that is just kind of what everyone was doing at the time. But I don't know, like, to what degree are you performing it, or is this just kind of like an extension of what you were already doing?
I mean, I think it was quite, I mean, I think everything you're sort of doing online is performative, or, you know, if we're really like going there. So I have to lay that down as the basis for my thinking, is that none of it was performed in a really overt sort of way. I think it all came really naturally to me, and that I think it was exciting for me to have this outlet on this platform, because it was also like, you know, I think what's exciting about the internet, and especially the early internet, was that, or the mid, I guess this is post early internet, but sort of this middle period of online, was that I was able to try on a lot of things, or to be sort of a hype souped up version of myself.
Right.
So like, and I think a lot of people probably feel this way, but often the people that are like acting out online or doing these sorts of things aren't always like the class clown or the person that's like the loudest in the room, or like, I don't think I'm like the most socially adept person. In school, I was always very shy. And so for me, it was just like an outlet. So of course there's a performative aspect to that, or there's like it sort of gave me a hard edge in a way that was exciting to me. And I was like, I've looked back at my old Tumblr posts, because for a while I was kind of writing about them, and it's funny how much I was like just trolling, like just really going there and just being so annoying. And I find that like quite endearing.
Yeah. I mean, it is this kind of trope that I've been seeing, I've seen persist even today. The loudest people online, you meet them in person and they're kind of not that way at all.
Yeah, they're just like on their phone.
Yeah, they're literally.
And I'm trying, I'm trying to be more, I mean, my relationship to the internet has changed so much. It's been, you know, many years now. It's been like 20 years since I started posting myself on the internet. Mm-hmm. So obviously like, it's age, it's the way that the internet has changed. It's like all of these things in tandem. And there's like this really, I'm so thankful, I guess, for all the stuff that I did on the internet in my youth and how, I don't know. I'm thankful that I was just like able to have that as a space.
Yeah.
And I'm not like, I'm not really embarrassed by it, I guess. I think some people maybe would be. I've been thinking about how people will archive their Instagram posts.
Yeah.
I think that's a really normal practice. I think a lot of people do that and I've never done that. And I don't really, and every once in a while some weird like guy or like, you know, weird random man will go through and like all of my selfies, like going way back. And I'm like, oh, like it would be so easy for me to just like have a sort of a more updated resume or a more updated kind of vibe to my Instagram. But I've just like left everything up.
I think that you're either one of two people. Yeah. And it's always the people who have like a huge expanse of like, often people who are on Tumblr, just like you're posting relentlessly. What do you do? I guess you could wipe the whole thing, but you can't really go back and manually archive some of these posts. I actually just recently went back on my old Tumblr and I was trying to archive some of them just because like I was so young. I was like 12 and it's humiliating. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, no one's gonna fucking see it.
No, unless you like this is the only time people are gonna go looking for stuff is if you become a certain level of famous.
So true.
And then they'll be like, okay, well did she like say something fucked up when she was 15?
Literally.
And I went through and archived my entire Tumblr back when there was, Tumblr has changed hands so many times, and I think when it was owned by Yahoo, they did a sort of like NSFW ban.
The purge,
this was 2020. They gave us 2 weeks and I decided I would try and back up my entire Tumblr in that 2 week period, and I did, and I was sort of surprised like how it was sort of like, it was weird because I was reliving all of these bad relationships that I was in and like these kind of like weird, and also I'm 9 years sober, so a lot of it I was drinking. There were periods where I was like heavily drinking and using drugs and openly sort of talking about it, and I'm fine with that, but it was weird to kind of experience that again. But I was sort of surprised and I was like, I'm pretty squeaky clean, like knock on wood. Like, yeah. But I was like, I'm surprised I'm not like more surprised by what I'm finding here.
Is that something that you do often? I feel, I talk to my friends a lot about this, the practice of like looking at your own Instagram through someone else's perspective.
Oh yeah. Well, I haven't had a crush in a while. Okay. And I think that when that that sort of mania, that sort of mania induced thing where you're trying to see yourself through someone else's eyes, and it's been a while since I did that, but of course that's always been a tool that I have.
Yeah. And I guess also when you have such a vast expanse of your life online, it would just be overwhelming to actually meaningfully go back through it. But do you ever do that? Like, how do you interact with your old, with your previous work?
I don't know. I go back to it occasionally when it feels relevant or when it feels connected to maybe more recent stuff that I'm doing, because I think there's a thread throughout everything.
Yeah.
Even if, and sometimes I really enjoy forcing myself to look at things that I find a little bit embarrassing, or to like go back and kind of reckon with that and be like, okay, what was I actually trying to do here? Like, especially when something embarrassing that you did got a lot of attention at the time. Right. I think for me, that's the hardest, where like sometimes you can post something or you can make a video or a work and it kind of goes under the radar. And I think also, so it's pretty often. I mean, a lot of the times I'm also like remixing or reinterpreting old stuff. Like I've even been doing this kind of ongoing piece, or I'm really into vision boards as a concept right now. So I've been working with these, my old photos from a high school hard drive, okay, and uploading them to actually a Tumblr account called Haircuts Folder, which Haircuts Folder was like my first, my Haircuts Folder in high school was like my first kind of like aspirational folder, where I would just save these pictures of like other teenage girls basically, or like young women with haircuts that I liked, but really they were just like, I just like thought they were attractive, mm-hmm, and I like wanted to be them or emulate them or look like them. And I probably didn't know much about them. And so I've been kind of working with, and I have all those photos still, which is, I'm so thankful that I have them.
It's crazy that you still have them.
Because somehow that my hard drive from high school has survived all these years. I don't know. It's like a Western Digital My Book from like probably 2005 or 2006. And so I've been going through all of that and kind of like re-uploading some of them. And this folder that was once so private that I would like never show anyone, right, I've just been like uploading them periodically, mm-hmm, to this kind of like weird collaged Tumblr account, along with pictures of myself from that time, but mostly pictures where like my face isn't in it. So really the only faces we're seeing are like these girls that I was aspiring to look like. And I think it's also like quite interesting to, because there's been such a rise in the use of digital cameras, or like, you know, early 2000s digital cameras, right, like Bella Hadid is like shooting with like an old Canon or something. Yeah. And seeing that sort of like come back around, or those aesthetics, like gives these photos like a new sheen.
So true. Yeah.
And I feel like, I think it can be tricky to work with old stuff, because after a while it falls into this like nostalgia trap, which I think I always want to avoid, even though my work often dives in there.
Right.
Because I never want someone to just look at something and be like, oh, I remember when that happened. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want that to be the takeaway. I want there to be more. And sometimes, right, I succeed at that, and sometimes I fail. I've failed many times with using old stuff. And so it's always a constant kind of like reworking. I also think a lot of times I really want to use, for example, like in my video work, especially like on stuff around like YouTuber culture, influencer culture, I really want to use like consumer grade cameras, right, or I want to use the correct sort of period appropriate of the time. So like, oh, all the girlies are using a Sony ZV-1 to vlog. Like, I'm going to buy that camera.
Right.
I'm going to have the ring light. I'm going to have this thing, because even though it might look kind of boring or like look like everything else on YouTube, I think I'm always thinking about like, well, what it'll read so well 20 years from now, instead of me like shooting it on, like, why would I shoot on film?
Yeah.
You know? Exactly. So I'm always thinking about the future.
I mean, I did notice when I was looking at your stuff, there's like a time where I was like, oh, her quality got so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I still really like working with really low res and like low quality, especially webcams. Like,
yeah,
I probably have like 30 webcams.
Oh, wow.
I have like I've become obsessed with the collecting webcams. And I also think that when you're working with technology, you know, certain computers support certain things. And so I have to keep a lot of old tech around in order to like, right, it just becomes a mess, honestly.
That's true. Webcams, they're so like messy and clunky, and just, mm-hmm, like aesthetically don't like them. But the MacBook webcam, you know, like the white MacBook, I don't know if that's, yes, like the one that everyone had, but, yeah, that's the one that I had for a long time. It's shocking how bad the webcam was on that.
I think the webcam on the new MacBooks, because I just got a new MacBook, mm-hmm, like last month or 2 months ago, and I haven't had a MacBook since, the last MacBook I bought was in 2011. Okay. So it's been a while. And I hate the quality on the webcam.
It's bad?
It's not hitting for me. Like, it's not right. And so I have all my external webcams that I'm like plugging in. Damn. But then, you know, now there's no USB drive. Right. So like I have to get the little like adapter thing, and then, you know, then it like glitches a bit. Or if it's a really new computer, it's not going to always recognize like really old hardware. So I keep around, like, I have like a 2014 iMac that I like basically only keep around so that I can like use it to read certain hardware. Right. It just becomes like really messy really quickly.
You know, the iMacs are like, are they defunct?
I actually don't know.
I think they are.
Yeah.
But something that you said earlier about like wanting to be of the times, reminds me of something that I think about a lot when I look at, some of the work that you've done, that highlights like the absurdity, but also like the total mundanity of being online at that time in that era, where at the time you're doing something really normal or that other people would think is really normal. But then looking back on it 10 years later or whatever, even like 2 years later, even sometimes 6 months later, like, what the fuck was that? That was so weird.
Yeah.
Like, girls used to be sitting in their rooms singing in front of their cameras with like a YouTube karaoke version on, and then they're like, yeah, I'm gonna upload this to the internet.
Absolutely. But that impulse will always remain. It's just the packaging will change. I think the underlying sort of desire in that, like in wanting to upload a singing video, I mean, we saw it on Musical.ly, which became TikTok, like,
so true.
You know, even TikTok like 5 years ago. Yeah. Oh my gosh. 5 years ago. Yeah. Pre-pandemic, TikTok was a very different environment. And like, we were really watching a lot of, you know, girlies just sort of like lip syncing video, like viral tracks. So it's the same thing. It's the same thing as when, you know, we were putting song lyrics as our AOL, you know, instant messaging away message. Yeah. Like there's all these threads. And I think that I'm interested in like tracking all of that. And I know that, and I also think that we're really flippant about what's happening right now. In, I mean, actually, I want to take that back, because I think we're in a weird era where everyone needs to like dissect everything, and so everyone has a PhD for some reason. Yeah. But like, we can talk about that later. It's like the weird like think piecification of content right now is like, is bizarre to me. And it feels like this snake eating its own tail, or like it's just turning in on itself in this interesting way. But for the most part, I think as culturally, we're very flippant of what like sort of is popular on the internet.
Yeah.
Especially when girls do it.
That's true.
And I'm always like, okay, but one day you're gonna wish that you had this, or like you're gonna want this, even if it feels like really second nature or mundane to you. Like you're gonna want to look back on it, or you're gonna want to like think about it a little bit more.
Yeah, like the practices or like the habits that we have and how we interact online. I don't know, what do you think are, I don't want to say trends, but like habits that we used to have, particularly girls online, that have changed, that you kind of miss, or maybe not to use the word nostalgic, but you think that were maybe like constructive or interesting?
Oh, that's such a good question. I have to think about it. I mean, I think that a lot of stuff just keeps getting repackaged for me. I really miss long form content. Mm-hmm. People are still doing it, but it's not like the same. I sort of miss that. I'm glad that we're sort of entering, that blogging is becoming popular again, or that I'm able to kind of read more of that. I wonder if that feels tied to the sort of discoursification of it all. and if, because I don't know that anyone's sort of earnestly just writing about their life anymore. I think we've all grown like too self-conscious. I miss when things felt more exploratory, or more like you could get lost, or where, but I mean, I've talked about this quite a bit, where I think, you know, a website's objective is to, or a platform or an app's objective is to keep you on it as long as possible. And it's quite hard to leave.
Yeah.
And so I miss that. But I think that that is more to do, like, there are still ways for me to do that. I just, it's a sort of a muscle or a practice that you have to work harder at.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. I have been seeing kind of a return to blogging as well. A lot of my friends have email, not like newsletters, and it's not Substacks. They just like, they go into their Gmail and they send emails.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. I really like that.
I don't really know what it's a reaction to specifically, but I don't know. I think a lot about what, and I do have a problem with the word cringe, and like trends or just like online habits that we used to have. And I don't know exactly what it is where now we look back at them and they are cringe.
Yeah.
And I don't know what makes them cringe and why everything is always going to be seen as cringe if enough time passes.
I think it's just a natural reaction to a sort of somewhat recent past self.
Mm-hmm.
I think eventually it enters into nostalgia.
Okay.
Where like, you're like, okay, you know, for example, take like, oh God, take like, well, okay, let me backtrack. Everything that is cool right now is going to become uncool. And then it will become cool again as after enough time has passed. And this could be like really micro things to really macro things, like large, like, you know, the 20-year cycles in fashion or whatever. I think the internet has maybe complicated some of that because things move really quickly and people can sometimes be on different timelines. But ultimately, I think it's just a really normal reaction to a recent past self because maybe we feel like we should have known better. Like we should have like, oh, like a couple of years has passed. And like, why was I posting that on Twitter? Right. Like, why didn't I kind of like know better? Mm-hmm. And you learn, you get older, you learn kind of how to behave in the world or you get better at refining your performance or however you want to be perceived.
Yeah.
And you get interested in new things or you start to build upon things or you become smarter or whatever it is that you think. And I think that's why it's really painful. But then if we are very cringe or awkward or embarrassing, but if I look at something that I, like, for example, like for me, when I think about like 2017, I'm like, oh, what was she doing? Like, what was she doing online? And I force myself to like interface with that sometimes or to like look at some of the art I made or some of the stuff that I was doing kind of in that 2015, 2016, 2017 era. And I'm like, I'm so much smarter now. Like, I cannot read an interview that I did like back then.
Why? What is it about it, that time?
I think that for me specifically, that time was a time where I was getting a lot of attention. I didn't know what to do with it. Okay. There have been waves where I've gotten attention and that was also like this sort of the selfie feminism era and the and I've been wanting to write about it, but I haven't really figured out how to. And I realized that like life is long and an art career is long and like you just like keep going and you don't really like need to dwell on that. But there is a part of me that's like, what's like striking a chord for me here? Is it because I was getting attention and there was a lot of pushback? Was it because like I would go to a party and then I would hear that everyone started talking about me after I left? Like visibility in a way is very difficult and like you're visible and you are also a dumbass.
Yeah.
And so, and people aren't, and you have to sort of be okay with people having opinions about you or ideas about you. And I think a lot of people, especially online people or people that aren't like protected by a certain level of celebrity. And I think a lot of us now that we all kind of are micro celebrities in our own right, experience that. Mm-hmm. And so that was like a particularly hard time for me.
Right.
And I was really excited to be getting attention. So I was like, oh yeah, I'll do that like dazed interview. And, you know, I'll be like, oh, why did they like write that title? Or like, why are they getting sort of the work wrong? But also like, you're still figuring out what your work is.
Exactly.
So it's difficult.
Yeah. I mean, visibility, I think just fundamentally changes the way that you act. That's like, that's just like a principal characteristic of being a human being. It's very like Sartrean.
Yeah.
The point that you made about how everyone is like their own micro celebrity in their own right, or at least we are acting like it.
Yes.
I know we talked a little bit before about like performativity and everyone's performing online. Da, 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 da. How do you feel about the title performance artist?
I'm down.
Okay.
I would say that for me, it's hard because I think that right now even I feel like an aversion to saying I'm a digital artist,
right,
because I'm like, oh, NFTs. Like,
yes.
I really like feel like NFTs like changed things, and I can see a lot of artists that maybe didn't go into that route, which was me. You know, I really didn't like venture into that world too deeply,
right,
for my own reasons, mostly because I'm lazy, and other reasons because I'm not aesthetically like that excited by it,
yep,
or conceptually really. But I think I've noticed that a lot of people like really don't want to be making art about the internet or talking about the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And I can feel myself being like, okay, yeah, like I'm not like those other internet artists. Like, no, like I'm cool.
Yeah.
Like I'm really cool. I promise I'm cool. Like I'm reading about other stuff, you know? And like right now I'm like, I'm reading like 100-year-old books.
Yeah,
like, you know,
yeah,
I'm trying,
yeah,
to like not, I'm like, I feel like I know everything about the internet right now. Like I need to look at like other media that feels like connected to all my ideas but still, right, is fully outside of it. And so I'm trying to understand that impulse in me and be like, don't run away from it. Like you have to understand that like these things go in and out of style,
right,
and like you have to just go forth in like, mm-hmm, what you find interesting. And so for me, the term performance artist, I'm like, well, that's like feels more grounded in like a longer kind of legacy, even though I'm sure we all have like sort of notions about what, or caricatures of what like bad performance art is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think like ultimately I'm interested in that, or like conceptual art.
Yeah. I mean, performing on the internet, I guess it's probably the best place to perform.
Yeah. And I think the internet has just sort of made that performance, or like given us that ability to kind of like have an extension of ourselves,
mm-hmm,
that I think has been exciting and also oppressive in some ways.
Of course, yeah. Do you find that a lot of your work, I mean, you mentioned trying to get away from like meta self-referential like internet work about the internet. What other things are you trying to draw in, or what do you draw from?
Like, what am I, like, what's my inspo, or like, or just like what, oh, besides the internet?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I'm interested in a lot of things, and I think they all stem from the internet, but I think I'm more interested in just like circulation of content, of, right, images, of, you know, the way that we sort of like perform ourselves. I'm also interested in just like human nature, because I feel like it's just like sort of expanded upon via like the tools that we're given.
Yeah, totally.
And so for me, but it still is firmly grounded in the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that if the internet didn't exist, I would still be making work, and I'm sure it would be concerned with similar sort of ideas, but I think it would be different.
Mm-hmm.
But I worry sometimes when work feels like it's too, I guess right now I've been trying to find ways to round out some of my thinking by trying to consume things that maybe are pre-internet or exist outside of it, while not like neglecting the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that aspect of it. Because I mean, what you said is right. There's always this continuum of things coming in and out. It obviously is extremely hyper-accelerated in the internet. And I mean, I think that that is such a crazy thing that it totally warrants all these people not necessarily freaking out about it, but drawing attention to it and talking about it.
Yeah.
Because it's very new. Well, still.
I also think we have like a lot of this stuff is like quite young,
yeah,
or like,
yeah,
new technology is young, and like, I know. And like, I've seen, maybe I'm like a curmudgeon, but I've like seen, you know, I'm not interested in VR. I'm not interested in AI. I'm not interested in NFTs. Like I'm actually quite low tech.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm interested in like these other things that we all know how to use. Yep. Like I'm not, and so I think sometimes I'm not fully in that realm either.
I mean, I think that's probably what makes your work much more, I mean, I don't want to say accessible, but like, I mean, people who are on Tumblr.
Yeah.
Were into your work. It was like, yeah. Not just people who are into AI and are into that kind of discourse,
yeah.
Which is like highly particular.
I find that my practice, I feel like I have one foot out the door in every single scene, mm-hmm. of people, yeah, in this, yeah. way. And it's harder because it makes you less legible.
Yeah.
I think it makes it you less sort of packageable and consumable, but I think what's exciting about that for me, and maybe I've shot myself in the foot because of that, like career wise or success wise or money wise, frankly, is that I love that people are able to have different access points to me,
yeah.
different ways of relating to me. I mean, I think for me, what's exciting about posting on a platform like YouTube, for example, is like I'm talking in the language of YouTube. I'm doing sort of these things. Anyone can find it if they search for the right terms or if YouTube recommends me or whatever it is. And I love when like YouTube will kind of accidentally randomly recommend a video and the people will be like, why?
Yeah, yeah.
Like one of my most viewed videos on YouTube is an earwax removal video,
okay.
that I made, like using an earwax removal kit, mm-hmm. That I made probably in like 2016.
So kind of pre, like earwax removal videos are big right now. I see them a lot on TikTok.
Well, that's funny because you don't actually see anything.
Yeah.
This isn't like a sort of like a gratifying kind of like oddly satisfying video. Right. It's just like me and I have a lot of issues with my ears, but I woke up one day and I was like, I'm just gonna like film this, mm-hmm. in the style of kind of like a vlog, okay. right? But my interest has always been like taking these kind of terms or these parameters and then kind of like doing them a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
And sometimes intentionally and sometimes not intentionally. And people let me know that I did it wrong. And I think that to me, that's exciting. I feel like, I don't know. Everything that I do in that realm kind of feels like experimental in this way where I'm not sure exactly how it'll be received. And I think that's what's exciting about it for me is that, yeah. I'm getting this kind of like feedback, but not just from like, it's not like, oh, it was received well or badly from the art world. Like, how is it being received by like the random person that stumbles upon it? And like, how does this reflect kind of how we all kind of fail,
mm-hmm.
at performing or like, aspiring to certain levels of beauty or like aesthetically pleasing lives or whatever it is. And I think it goes deeper than that, but I realize that, and there's something sort of slightly off about these videos, right? Like I just uploaded a video where I was doing a What's in My Bag style video, which are like rampant. You know, like we've been doing What's in My Bag since the dawn of the social internet. Yeah. And so I'm pulling, but instead of actually pulling the actual items out of my purse, I'm pulling images of items, like pieces of paper, essentially, that I, they're all like in their own plastic sheet. And someone left like a really lengthy comment on the video and was like, I can't tell like what your intention is. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, when I'm filming this video, like, yes, like obviously it's absurd that I'm pulling these products out of my bag that are just pictures, but at the same time, like I'm commenting on them as if they are like with my real opinions, right, like I'm, yeah. like I think this blush is bad, do I actually own that blush or not, like, mm-hmm. You don't know, like do I actually use wired headphones, I don't, but I have them in my bag,
right.
And so there's and like what does it, I don't know, I'm interested in these sort of subtle like ways of kind of breaking it.
Yeah, I mean, people have a hard time with content that isn't explained to them. People love explaining things for other people now.
Yes.
I don't know exactly what it is about being online that people either expect that or feel the need to explain it to other people if it hasn't been provided for, yes. them already. They're very confused. And the thing that I equate it to in my mind is like when I watch a surreal film.
Yeah.
I hate when someone is asking me like,
oh, like, I don't understand why you did that. Or like, what's going on? And I'm like, just let it wash over you.
Yeah. Just kind of like, it's just like, yeah, just let it like happen.
Yeah.
And I think there's a real discomfort. I mean, we as people have a real discomfort of sitting in any form of unknown.
Yeah.
It's why we ruin our own lives. But I think it's, that's at the base of it is like sort of not being able to kind of neatly explain something or understand something or dissect something. And I think for a long time, I always kind of, and then I also wonder how much I want to explain my own work. Mm-hmm. Because I think for a long time I didn't. I was like, you know, I don't really want to explain it. I think a lot of the excitement for me is how it's recontextualized or seen, and mm-hmm. also like, and it's thrilling for me to post because I'm like, where's it going to end up? Is this anything or nothing?
Right.
Sometimes, most of the time, it's nothing. Mm-hmm. And I think we have to remember that as artists, like, we don't know what work of ours is going to really like stick. It's yeah. never what you think it's going to be. And you don't really know like what this life ahead of you or like what you did or what you work on, whether it is going to like where it's going to go, I guess. And so, but I'm always excited about that kind of just like throwing it out there and seeing like how it's received or if anything comes from that.
I mean, it's funny that you talk about it that way because that's not a part of it that I had thought about before, like working with the algorithm and that determines, like, that is a part of the piece kind of.
Yeah. And it's like, I feel like people are really into generative art and I'm like, yeah. posting on YouTube is generative. I'm sorry. Like,
I know. Well, like, I guess the way that most people frame it is if there's like an element of virality, like a good piece will have a lot of views or will have a lot yes. of eyes on it. But there's so much stuff. The majority of the internet, no one is looking at, or very few people are looking at.
And that's like thrilling to mm-hmm. me.
Yeah.
Like today I was just looking up images that had photo bucket watermarks on them.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I love these like ugly, like unusable photos, you know? And yeah, I also think that that's like maybe it's not a new thing, but you know, you look at a platform like TikTok and like the purpose of that platform is for you to go viral, mm-hmm. right? We're all hoping that we go viral, but then we see what happens to people when they go viral. And we're like, but maybe like we want to go like, we want like some mid-range success. Yeah. Like, you know, like the YouTuber or like the way that we turn against people once they get a certain amount of success online as well. Like I've seen it time and time again, like YouTubers that you follow from like, you know, their first 1,000 followers get up to a certain point and like quit their day job. Yeah. And then it's like, oh, they're no longer relatable or this XYZ. And so I'm like, is virality or is like sort of reaching the top of this thing that's inherently volatile? It's not sustainable. Also, like, it is horrifying to me to build your career or your livelihood off of whether or not people like you and whether or not people think you're cool, because right. they will never think you're cool forever. Mm-hmm. Especially like if you have attention from teenagers, they're going to grow out of that. Like, you know, what do you think is cringe now that you liked when you were 14? Probably a lot of people.
Yeah.
You know? And so there's just a huge issue with all of this for me. I'm not, and it's weird because I think that I'm in a unique position where I've existed not only as an artist, but as someone that was able to kind of get this weird attention. And I feel like there was a time in my life where and obviously when I was getting a lot of attention online, I was not, you know, we weren't monetizing it. Like right. you weren't able to like really build an influencer career off of that. But I'm like, I wonder if that was an option, like where would I have gone? Mm-hmm. Like, would I have just like wanted to get paid for like chilling? Or would I have wanted to like really remain wanting to have an art career? I don't think either of them are better than the other.
I mean, yeah, there is this necessary element of virality when you're making art on the internet. You kind of need that viral component in order to keep doing it.
I think, but at the same time, I think people don't take you seriously if you're kind of famous online.
Yeah, that's true.
I think people have been like, sometimes I'm like, I wish that like I started popping off at a later age when I like was being less like, you know, of whatever. I wish sometimes I feel really jealous of artists that didn't have all that visibility at a really young age,
yeah,
or that weren't sort of like, oh, well, she's just like a blogger. Mm-hmm. You know, she's not like doing anything interesting.
Because right. It's also wrapped up in like being of the times and like the work that you were making mm-hmm. at the time. And it was like just somehow like catching on to this thing that was happening parallel.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of, I don't know, do you ever feel like pigeonholed or like you're too closely tied with that era?
No. I mean, it's interesting. I think I've come to terms with a lot of this stuff. And I think I've also realized that this is what's exciting about the work that I make for me is yeah. like how this is just, I don't know. I think it's just given me a unique perspective into making the work that I do and to making work about performing and performance online and the internet in general. So no. And if anything, it's kind of fun. Like, there's been so many eras of me, I guess. And it's funny to figure out like who knows you from what time yeah. or like what access point. And so like, for example, like for a while I have a TikTok account. I don't post on it that regularly, but sometimes I do. And the best is when like a post will kind of get a little bit of attention and so many people will just be like, oh my God, I remember you from Tumblr. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, there's this whole sect of people that like, obviously, like, why would they didn't follow me to Instagram. They didn't follow me to like these other platforms
right.
because they don't really need to. And now they're like, find their algorithm, like spit me out, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, I've unlocked like some core childhood memory for them or something.
I see that so much with, you know, Nara Smith, who's on TikTok right now. It's this like whole, she's having a real
oh moment. Yes. The Mormon
yes.
person, yeah,
and she's married to Lucky Blue Smith,
yes,
like a major Tumblr guy. I didn't really see him on my feed, but I was on
yeah
like,
he wasn't I wasn't part of the like hot I w- didn't know what yeah. like the hot people kind of normatively hot people were doing on
I was
Tumblr.
On like alt Avant-teen
yeah
Tumblr. But all her comments, or at least for a while, they were like, is that Lucky Blue Smith? Mm-hmm. And like all these people who hadn't thought about this man in
yeah
years.
I think it's kind of like, it's interesting to be like someone else's sort of like nostalgia point.
Yeah.
And I think that you could really like, and sometimes I worry about going too deep into Tumblr for that, like almost like fan service right, in a way. Right. For a while I was going through every year of my Tumblr and writing about it. When I would like kind of alert people that I posted a new blog post about it, like on Instagram, I would post photos from that time and they would perform really well because people were like, oh my God, she was like such an icon, like the moment, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, like this doesn't make me feel good. Like this makes me feel weird and not like, oh, I'm old, but more like, oh, like can I get like some you to like be excited about like some stuff I post now? Or like when you see a celebrity who was maybe more popular like in the 90s or the 2000s, but they just keep posting like throwback pics on their Tumblr
or, they start a
or
podcast
on their Instagram
about the show or movie that they
exactly. I'm like, no, like I cannot go there. Like I so sometimes I feel wary of my way of interfacing with it, but I don't care that other people have those reactions.
Right. Yeah.
I just don't want to like milk that.
Exactly. Like stay too long in the glory days.
Yeah.
Or what did I see the other day that reminded me of that? Which I love Kyle MacLachlan and he's done great things since yeah. Twin Peaks, but like on a certain day of the year, he like drives past the Twin Peaks sign and then like everyone goes and
like,
claps.
Freaks out. Yeah.
And everyone was like, it's kind of giving peaked in high school.
It's yeah, exactly. And like, I really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So, but I understand it, but it feels good because you're getting that kind of instant. I know why people do it because yes. it feels really good to get attention.
Of course.
Obviously.
Mm-hmm. Another part of your work that I think maybe we had touched on, but like the archivalness mm-hmm. of it, like you have that one piece, I forget that what it's called, because it's like a huge number. It's like 9 million.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's all of the photos on what, like your photo booth?
Yeah. Yeah. From like 20, probably 2014 up until I think I made that in 2021, maybe. Yeah,
like it's, I guess a lot of your work seems inherently very wrapped up with like your development just as a person, yeah. But then also this archival part about it that is extremely computer centered.
Yeah.
And then you also do those like desktop, what are they called?
Desktop desktop dumps. Yeah. And then I write about them. Yeah. Yeah.
How did you start doing that? What's your process like? Are you actively saving things on your desktop so you can curate this? I mean, it goes back to the like the performative what's in my bag thing, yeah, where people are very obviously curating their bags.
Yeah. Like, but I'm wondering, like, why not have a more fun with it? Like, why not lean into it and make it more yeah, silly?
You might as well.
You know? It's because the way that we curate is so like, it's so subtle, mm-hmm, right? It's like it has to be believable,
yeah,
even if it's curated, and it has to be relatable, but it has to be aspirational. So it has to rest somewhere where like the people that watch this want what you have or like aspire to it in some way so that they keep watching you, but they have to relate to you enough that you're not totally just like out of their reach, right? Yeah. They have to see themselves in you. I think that there's And it's sort of, there's like a Barthes quote in Mythologies, I think, towards the end where he's sort of talking about this and it's maybe a little more political, but he's like, as long as the kind of like secretary sees herself in like this, the movie star or whatever, like we're always just going to be fucked, essentially. That's me fully paraphrasing here, but I really think that that's really at play, especially now that we're really watching people that are just like us, right? Even thinking about like celebrities are just like us, like how that functioned in magazines.
Right.
And now we have like people that feel closer to us, but still feel like stars in their own right. And so for me, the curatorial aspect is happening there. But then I'm sometimes like, why don't we just like really lean into it and like really just get like, and I'm not being like, oh, be like so quirky, but I'm like it's just so absurd, mm-hmm, and like we can do anything we want and yet we still live within these kind of parameters.
Exactly.
Because really we just want power.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know why, it kind of reminds me of Lou Reed and the interviews that he used to give where he was just firmly lying the mm-hmm whole time. And it's like, well, we're all lying anyway. Like if you're sitting down with someone and they're asking you a bunch of questions about your personal life, you're going to like bend the truth and exactly, you're going to omit information. Yeah. Why not just fucking lie?
Yeah. And for a long time, I was really, I think my, to kind of go back to this point about like curation or whatever, but like, for a long time, I was really like, well, no, I have to be as honest as possible. I have to be like so open and so honest on the internet. Like I went from like trolling and shit posting to then being like, actually like radical honesty. Like I need to just be fully on there, like, and just like not be embarrassed.
Right.
And now I've sort of gone back and I'm like, I'm just like somewhere in between now. Because even that like weird radical honesty approach, it's still perform. It's still like,
I know,
it's still its thing, yeah, you know?
You can't escape it.
You can't escape it. It's just another aesthetic decision, essentially. So when it comes to like the desktop dumps or something like that, which is where I upload the contents of my desktop to a website, to the internet, before I go and clean it. So sometimes it happens like once a month. Sometimes it happens like once every 6 months, like it just depends. I started doing it during the pandemic. I don't know what prompted it. It just like happened. I during the pandemic, at the beginning of the pandemic, I was like, I had just had a show that closed after 2 weeks.
Okay.
In New York. And I had made a lot of physical work for that show and I don't normally work very physically. I hadn't even a scent based piece I had made candles that had these sort of like conceptual scents, and the idea was like it felt like a TJ Maxx kind of candle display.
Okay.
Because I love the camaraderie of us all smelling the candles at TJ Maxx, and so I wanted to force people into that kind of position in the gallery. And of course, you know, that piece, those candles are just locked up in my closet, never to see the light of day again. But you know, once that show closed and once the pandemic was really like in full swing, I was like, oh, I'm going to start making websites again. Yeah. Or like, I guess I got to stop thinking about like physical work. And like, I have to remember that, like, you know, this is my bread and butter. So like, I better just start being online again in a certain way. And so that was sort of an offshoot of that. Mm-hmm. But with the desktop dump, it's interesting because, you know, you just start to subconsciously curate this space that is quite private for mm-hmm. most people. And I find one of the last private spaces. I think the pandemic really surged with us, the curation of the private space.
True.
I think that already, you know, bedrooms for YouTubers were sets, but it extended to the kitchen, extended to all parts of the home because everyone was kind of making content from mm-hmm. their homes mm-hmm. In a way that they hadn't been at the same rate before. And so the desktop felt like one of these last spaces that was, it was sort of an untouched space. And I noticed that, you know, subtly I would start to kind of perform for it, or I would know that something was going to go up so I wouldn't save it there. Or sometimes I would be responsible and actually save something to the right folder and be like, oh, but it would look so good in the desktop dump. Right, so it's course. Like always negotiating that. But I've never like made one just from like, and you know, I've never like made one with an idea or something. For me, they almost act as like documentation of what I was working on at the time, because often, you know, I'll just be saving whatever projects or whatever I'm doing or like fragments of things. So to me, they feel like these weird little like time capsules mm-hmm. in a way.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what it is. And it's cool to even be able to break it up. Versus when I go on my desktop, I'm like, yo, like I'm in the trenches right now. I'm looking at shit from years ago.
So how often do you clean your desktop?
Like
never.
Very
but
often.
Do you not save much to your desktop?
Only like when I have to. It's a lot of screenshots. All yeah. my screenshots go to the desktop.
Yeah.
But in terms of curating, it's funny because I find, I don't know, I really need to divorce myself from this idea that like, curating is cringe or like disingenuous mm-hmm. or bad in a certain way, because it is just like kind of a natural function that we have. But even my bag, I feel like I'm kind of like always curating the things
what's inside of it.
Yes.
Are you hoping that someone will like see what's in there?
I guess.
Or what do you think? Like, I mean, that's so interesting to me.
I'm hoping for like an opportune time to like pull out my Lana Del Rey lighter.
Yeah. I understand.
And like show someone like, oh, this is just the kind of person I am.
Yeah, I know. And we're really, we really feel defined by our possessions and our objects. And I think that feels even more, everything feels so much more custom, I think, than it used to be as well. Like you can really get like whatever niche item or thing that you're looking for. And so I understand that. I mean, you know, we choose how we dress, and that's, you know, that's like an original kind of form of that.
Right.
How we present ourselves in the world, like, you know, what we're doing online isn't any different than the subtle ways that we do it in person. It just, there's more outlets for it. There's more opportunities for it.
Yeah. Like, I guess there's certain elements or certain functions of curating your self-image that are seen as very normal and are okay, like choosing your clothes.
Yeah.
But then when you do others, it comes off like you're very self-obsessed or like navel-gazing or thinking too much about yourself. Like someone who's very obviously clearly trying to curate whether it's their online persona or like their bag or like something that they're putting out into the world, where it's like, maybe you're thinking about yourself a little bit too much.
Yeah. But isn't everyone? And like, also like, we love to just call and this is pretty gendered for the most part too, is like, who are the majority of the people like taking photos of themselves? Who are the majority of the people making like mood boards, vision boards, sharing what's in my bag videos, what I eat in a day videos, all this stuff. It's girls. Mm-hmm. And so we're just like love telling them that they're narcissists, but then we also expect them to perform a certain level of, you know, beauty and femininity and authenticity. I think that we just like love that word, and we're always trying to like sniff out who is authentic and who is not.
Yeah. which online, I mean, I guess even just offline, in it doesn't, I don't know to what degree it exists.
It doesn't exist. It's fully a marketing term. And I remember like saying that a long time ago and everyone was like the whole, it was like during a presentation and the whole room sort of gasped and they're like, what do you mean authenticity doesn't exist? I'm like, it doesn't. No. I don't know what to tell you.
I mean, I talk about this a lot, or at least it's something that I think about a lot. Just the self image that people are trying to put out into the world, and they're trying to, I feel like now people are trying to make it align as closely as they can to their most authentic self. But it's like, you will never have a good, an image of yourself. You will never be able to understand how someone else sees you.
No.
And it's just like a totally fruitless navel gazing attempt for you to try to understand this. But we're all constantly wrapped up in doing that all the time.
Exactly. Exactly. And I don't think anyone should be like shamed for it, especially in a culture that like encourages that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm speaking of Western culture. I can't speak for any other culture, but like, you know, that's, it's, it, we live in a very individualistic culture, and it makes sense that people would approach it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I agree. I guess, do you have any, like shows or things coming up? What have you been doing lately?
So it's funny, the What's in My Bag video that I posted is actually just like a sketch for a larger piece that I'm working on. Okay. I'm working on a play that I can't like give too much detail about because it will be a little while before it is performed. It is, but what I can tell you is it's about three girls at a vision boarding party.
Okay.
And things will happen. It's also written in a way where the dialogue is different depending on like what images are picked up, and so it's always sort of like in flux, and it's partially fixed, partially improvised. So I'm writing that right now, hoping to start rehearsing next month.
Oh wow, that's soon.
Yeah, I'm going quickly. Yeah. I'm moving quickly. I the play has been in my mind for like a year or two now. And I started applying I've been applying for funding because normally I'm pretty scrappy with mm-hmm. my process and my work. And I don't, you know, I'm not a market artist, so I'm not making that much money off of the sale of my work pretty much ever. And so I always have to find sort of roundabout ways, but I'm also not like a grant artist that like gets a lot of funding from institutions. And this is, I've written this in a way that it can be scaled up or down. So my hope is that someone will bite and like give me a little bit of money, but worst case scenario, and it's really just so I can pay my performers, because right. I'm also not performing in it, which I'm excited to make something that I don't have to be in.
That's nice. It's always a great affordance when you get to that point.
Yeah.
And to be the main star.
I think I'll always be in my work. Like I feel like someone recently asked me, like, what happens when you get old? You know, how are you going to age, you know, in your work? And I'm like, I don't know. That feels like exciting to me. I also am like, if I ever have a child, like, am I going to make art about mommy vlogging? Like that's like exciting to me too. Yeah. But like, I don't know how I'll feel, you know, when I get there.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, that's like, it's part and parcel with actual aging, like the work that you'll be doing is going to be reflective of how you actually feel.
Yeah. And I think we're also like, everyone that, you know, I grew up in the age of people that were also growing up online for the first time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I was 14 when I started blogging. And so we're all aging on the internet at the same time. And I'm wondering, like, how we're all culturally going to navigate that. Because I'm already seeing these women out here going, how old do I look on TikTok? And it's really dark. It's really, really dark.
I know. I mean, something that I've been thinking about lately, I don't know your experience with this, but when I was a kid, I didn't know anyone who was, like, in their late 20s, really. It was very localized to, like, people my age. And now I feel like we have access to people who are way younger and older than us. Maybe they don't get fed to us through the algorithm, but like they are there and I see them on TikTok or Twitter or whatever. And when I was younger, I like thought the older people were like way lamer. I thought that the, like, being 18 was cool and being 30 sucked.
For sure.
And now that I'm approaching 30, I'm like, me and all my friends are way cooler than ever. And I can't believe I ever used to think otherwise.
I know. Well, I think there's a certain point when you're really young where you want to be older. Like, yes. All you want to do is be older. And then at some point that switches over and you're like, actually, I want to be like my age or younger. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also just like there's a volatility to sort of self-image and all this stuff when you're younger. And I think it gets hopefully better as you get older or you feel more, because I think, you know, there is this sort of like fear of aging online that I see very rampantly,
very persistent.
But I also am like, it seems like I get kind of like a little bit smarter or more articulate every year. So like maybe that's good. Like, I don't know.
I know. Like, I feel like I'm getting better every year. I don't know. I'll probably hit, I'll probably hit a peak, but I'm not going to think that way.
Yeah. I think it's good to not think that way and to not, I also like approach even my own like art practice where I'm like, yeah, I don't think I've made like my best work yet.
Yeah. I think that that's probably like the only way that you can work and survive as an artist.
Yeah.
Because if you already thought that your best stuff is over with, why are you still making stuff?
Because it's a compulsion.
Do you try to cultivate like an active art practice, or do you find that it just kind of comes out of you?
I feel really lucky that I'm at no shortage of ideas. I think that stuff takes honing, like even with this play that I'm working on now, like that took a while to like really hone in exactly like what the details of it were. I just sort of had a vague idea. But I feel so a lot of the way that my practice works is that I'll kind of get fixated on a concept or an idea and I'll maybe just kind of just work it out and keep making work about it until it finally clicks for me. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there's a lot of like mess along the way or things that don't fully feel right, but I like that feeling it out process.
Yeah that feels good. Seems like a good way to work.
Sometimes it takes like a decade for it to click, but sometimes it doesn't. It just depends.
Yeah. I struggle with like, my problem is probably like ideas. I feel like I really need to just like sit down and mellow out so I can like do that Lynchian thing where you're like grabbing an idea out of the ether. They aren't really arriving to me.
Do you look for inspiration? Like, are you like consuming media during this time, or are you just like, you're like, you know, you're just thinking about like some sort of amorphous
thing? I would say that like my general mode of being is consuming media.
Yeah,
so I think it's nice to take a break from that and sometimes just like meditate or even go back and look at your own archives or like things that you've saved, things that you've written down and be like, oh, that was a good idea, maybe I can do something with that.
That's good. Yeah, that's true. Like I feel like often I'll have an idea for something that won't come to fruition until much later. Mm-hmm. And it'll just be like a sort of a semblance of an idea that I wrote down like many years ago.
And like you lose context for it. So then you repackage it and you're like, oh, I wonder what I meant by that. And you're starting to see your own work through like another person's eyes.
It's exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where are you publishing your stuff right now? Where do people find you?
Oh, where do people find me? Okay. Well, my website is mollysoda.exposed.
And Ruby did something.
Yeah, coded. I don't know what's up with that piece because it's just online somewhere. So I don't know if it's like functioning, but it was like a web-based piece that like changed over the course of 4 weeks. And
okay, cool. Yeah, I remember checking it out when it first went up.
Yeah, I should go invest. Cool. It was cool. I feel like I should like it needs to be like refurbished or something.
Yeah.
Or like hosted somewhere else, but. And then I have a Substack, mollysoda.substack.com, if people want more context for what I'm doing. And then I don't know, I don't do myself any service because my website is just like hidden links everywhere. So you just stumble upon me or you don't.
It's fun. It's like an ambient interactive experience.
Yeah. But my Substack will help contextualize things, I think, a little bit more if that's what people are like looking for.
Nice. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.